Recommendi? Yes, ready? All right. Let's this show on the road. Please welcome to the July 13th meeting of the regular meeting of the Board of Commissioners, the Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District. We're going to start this meeting at 6 o'clock sharp. I'd like to call to order with a roll call, please.
Commissioner Higgins.
Present.
Commissioner Benson. Commissioner Coleman.
Here.
Commissioner Newman.
Here.
And President Dale.
Here. Pledge of Allegiance. Adam, would you lead us?
Well, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. At this point in our agenda, we would entertain any public comment on items not agendized this evening. If you have any comments that you would like to give or would like to speak with the board, please step to the podium, give me your name and where you're from, and let us have it. Please.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and commissioners and the public and staff. My name is Kevin McKernan. I'm resident of the city of Eureka. My home port is King Salmon. I just want to take a few moments to just announce to you and thank some folks. We have organized a kind of first of its kind, at least in a long time, legit captain's license course right here on Humboldt Bay. It starts next week. Seats are completely full. Thanks to RWE and Vineyard, who provided scholarships for 15 students to sign up. We actually have a wait list. The course is about $1,600 per person, so it's no small contribution. I don't think we would have been full up if it was not free. It's a pretty significant course. For those of you who know, it takes 80 hours, 2 weeks of your time, Monday through Friday. So it's going to be the next 2 weeks. Also like to thank the city of Eureka for dedicating the Wharfinger building for the course. It amounted to a little over $5,000 in waived fees in order to get it to happen. So a number of others of you here in the room and others have helped get the word out and recruit folks. I know at least one district employee, I think, has signed up and going, and you know, fishermen and others. So that's all I had. Just wanted to thank all those folks. And if you got any questions, I'll be around for a little bit. May not stick for the whole meeting, but thanks.
Hey, thank you.
No, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Always nice to get good, positive comments. All right. Seeing no more public comment. Everybody's done? We're going to move on to the consent calendar.
So move.
Second.
I have a motion and second. All in favor of passing the consent calendar, please signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Consent calendar passes. Communications, reports, correspondence.
We have none tonight. Going to staff report. It's okay?
Yep.
Okay, I guess we'll start with the executive director report. Whoops,
microphone's on. My apology. So, a brief little report tonight. It's important to know that the West Coast dredge hopper contract is in play. The Mansion Dredge Bayport is actively dredging and will remain active in the bay until early July. It's a real win for us this year. We previously reported, but just want to make a reminder that the core dredging has been underway and the Aquinas work is complete. They removed approximately 86,000 cubic yards. So a lot of love from the core this year. This dredge hopper contract and our recurring dredge operations with the core is really continuing in a positive cycle. The dredge operations plan, speaking of dredging, for Whidley Island Marina has been received from our contractor, Dutra. So our consultants are completing the compliance items, mainly a tier one compliance with EPA, and we're looking to commence dredge operations as soon as mid-July. Updates will be provided as planning further progresses. Of course, we'll have some notification to tenants and otherwise, but on target for the return of Dutra to complete our dredge cycle. So very happy for that. And then, as everyone knows, we've been working diligently to bring staff on and try to fill some positions. We are happy to announce that we were able to offer a position to a facilities coordinator, which is a very needed position in our organization. We received an acceptance, so our team will grow July 1st. So it's my report.
Thank you. I don't have a lot this month outside of the items that are on the agenda. Nordic and the outfall permits are going well. Getting really close. We're done with the coastal development permit, which is a major step, and getting close with the incidental take permit with CDFW, which will cascade through the rest of the permits.
What's it mean, really close?
Really close means we've been meeting with DFW on a weekly basis, negotiating on the exact details of what the mitigation looks like. I think we've come to conclusion, so we're submitting a final report, which they have 45 days to approve.
District Council?
Nothing for me.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Commissioners, we'll start with Patrick.
Oh, you know, I've been underwater again on the eel, and it looks like steelhead are bouncing back and coho are widespread. And also, although Chinook spawned in the main eel segments mostly, the rain was just right, water stayed a little, you know, off color while they were migrating, and winds blowing so nobody could fish, so the ocean productivity is up. So I like to shop for a lot of jacks and eel this summer, or this fall, September, October, and it's surprising, you know, the resilience of the eel and coho, which were like everybody was counting them out. Now They're swinging up. So I've been working too much, but I won't go into that.
Yeah. Thank you. Commissioner Coleman?
I don't have anything much to report tonight, other than I have a high school graduate in the family.
Oh, congratulations.
Since 2 hours ago.
Congratulations.
I work through ZMZ Marine Services as the operator for both Manson and E-Track on some of the surveying for the dredging that's going to commence. With E-Track, we went to spend a day on the Hoods area, and it's pretty amazing how high that Hoods area has become with all the dredging over the years. But the more significant thing was when I was running the Eaglet for Manson, and we actually, even though the weather was pretty good, we couldn't get anywhere near number 9. The shoal is so bad. I mean, I would bet on a minus tide, you could probably stand there in the middle of the channel. So pretty significant. And other than that, just getting ready for halibut season on the 25th. We have a 3-day commercial opener, and we get 25 fathoms of new territory we haven't had for about 20 years because they changed the rock cod conservation area for longliners. So we're hopeful about that, and we'll see what happens.
Good. I really don't have much to report myself. So I'm going to leave it at that and move on to unfinished business. Someone going to give us a status update?
Sure. So this, I believe, is the 8th consecutive monthly update on the wind terminal projects per your request.
If you're counting, yeah.
I think Rob's counting.
See if this works. There we go. So RFQ for engineering services is the next agenda item. So I'll get to that shortly. RFQ for terminal operator is a topic of interest to various stakeholders that'll be coming sometime later this year. We are actively lobbying for state funding, coordinating with PG&E regarding power demand and supply. The Pacific Offshore Wind Summit occurred since the last board meeting with Executive Director Nicholson presenting. Charles Darwin University and Cal Poly Humboldt have entered into an agreement on a number of different topics. They asked us to provide several of their staff with a tour of the bay. So we spent a couple of hours in here and then took them on a tour of the bay on the district fireboat. And that was really good to have their perspective. They're evaluating offshore wind in Australia right now, especially in their southeast coast. So, reminded me of the Schatz Energy Research Center kind of crew from Australia. Aquaculture Coalition about offshore wind projects has been meeting. I think we're probably at our sixth or seventh meeting with that crew now, and it's growing. We have officials from the California Department of Public Health and a number of other agencies now participating. We've been meeting with Caltrans and looking at traffic and the bridges and some projects they have of interest in the Manila area. Had several meetings with several different tribal governments this last month. And we anticipate having some big public meetings in late July or August, some dates to be announced pretty soon. And then I probably overdid this a little bit, but the Norwegian consulate asked one of us to attend a trip in Norway with a group of people, mostly ports from out the U.S. and BOEM. And so I attended that 2 weeks ago and went to like five different ports all over the southern and west coast of Norway. Never got in a car once. It was all public transit, trains, ferries, incredible transit system there. And Oslo is the walking capital of Europe. So Copenhagen and Amsterdam are proud of their biking, but Oslo is enamored with walking. I think the met with the planning director of the city of Oslo, and she said that 65% of all trips in the city of Oslo are exclusively walking. So people walking to work, they just have a very dense urban core, and they've set up an incredible pedestrian infrastructure. This all used to be roadway, and they eliminated it for bike and ped. 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day, we were in meetings, they just jam-packed it full and just shuttled us from one place to another. This guy was the most incredible presenter I've ever seen. The analysis of the global energy supply in the future was just remarkable. I wish I could get him here and have him present this. And we could all learn from the way he put his graphics together. It was incredible. Went on, Oslo has completely switched to electric tugboats. So this tug here, it's not a tug, I'm sorry, it's a ferry, fully electric ferries. And a lot of waterways in Norway, a lot of fjords. And so a lot of people ride ferries. And so this is, let's see if I can get this to work. This is the ferry as we were arriving. Sure, this is going to work well. This thing comes down and it all plugs in, and you can see how an electric ferry plugs in. But 15 minutes across the fjord, comes back, it loads for 10 minutes while it's charging, and then it just keeps going back and forth, charging on both sides. The port of Oslo,
we need one of those.
We do, it's similar to what we're planning for the terminal. When we're planning for a green terminal, this is what at least some of the cold ironing could look like, probably much larger scale that we're planning for. Port of Oslo, a lot of green initiatives that we can learn from. I hope to do a separate presentation about what I learned from them. Went to the largest carbon capture facility in the world, so concrete plants and waste to energy plants are now capturing their carbon emissions, their CO2 emissions. This facility, where they go onto a ship, they liquefy it, goes onto a ship, that ship brings it here, And then this facility pumps it underground through a pipeline out into the ocean to an abandoned oil well where it's injected under the ocean to be stored permanently. So I think something that we could look to in the future. And I don't know if this is a good part of the story or not, but you can see this little robot dog here on the left, what they called Atlas, right? We've kind of seen those. They are working on having the entire facility be unmanned, no jobs at the entire site. So the ships pull up and they plug in and they inject their CO2, but these robot dogs are just going to be patrolling the site constantly, taking.
Do they bite?
No, they didn't bite anybody. Nope. But they, they're training these robots to have the site have no people at it. This was our whole crew here in safety gear, and we went out, and they have a a big well similar to what we've got at RMT2, where this pipeline goes down and goes out to sea, just like our outfall. So very similar to what we've got. And I could do a whole presentation if you're interested in carbon capture, but I think that's a future industry in the U.S. Went to the Norwegian equivalent of the Shots Energy Research Center. And so they're doing a lot of studies on offshore winds. That night, I just thought this little sidebar was interesting. We went to this building that was built in the 1400s for dinner, and the whole thing was kind of crooked. And the staircase and the whole floor, if you dropped a bag of marbles, they would all just roll off to the side. But still impressive. I don't think our buildings are going to last for 600 years. Then the floating offshore wind conference, a lot going on in a lot of different countries. France was kind of the star of the show this year. Also something I noted is there's wind turbines everywhere onshore, and they often come in these clusters of two or three. And I asked why they have small clusters of wind turbines when in the US everywhere I see them, there's giant hundreds or thousands of them. And they said every small municipality has their own wind turbine, so they just have enough power for that community, and they have a more of a distributed power system instead of concentrated mega offshore wind farms. Lots of marinas. They were all really super packed and well-maintained, good opportunities to learn from their marinas there. And then this is the first floating offshore wind turbine in the world that's been in the water since 2009. Able Yards is an incredible port operator there, and we got a tour, again, suited up in the safety gear of these are the floating transfer stations. And so we got to tour these, and I was not allowed to take pictures on the inside, but it was the most incredible technology I've ever seen. It reminded me of this, but we weren't allowed to take photos. So this is the closest I can find what it looked like in there. This is the helicopter landing pad on top. A lot of sacrificial zinc anodes around the outside. So, they're built partially in Taiwan and partially here, and then going to Scotland. This is from my hotel, so very old city, but big industrial waterfront. This is about the same size as Eureka, this town of Haugesund. It's a photo from my hotel of the floating. So that's what the floating substations look like. And just another spot where I saw two more turbines just hanging out by themselves, powering a small little town. Then we went to the location where the first time ever they have taken floating offshore wind turbines that have been in the water for years, generating power, decoupled them, and towed them back from Scotland all the way to Norway. We did a 2-hour ferry trip where we stopped at this house, and it was the caterer, and they just dropped off the food. I thought that was a cool little experience. But anyway, here is the first ever floating wind turbine that had been towed back into port. It just arrived the day before we got there. Ring crane, similar to what we'll have. This is a spar buoy, but you can see the biofouling on there from being in the ocean for over a decade. So lots of kinds of mussels and seaweed and barnacles on that. See the red dots on the blade there? They're not that prominent, but apparently those really help prevent bird strikes. And that is my report for the month.
Thanks, Rob. Well done. Any questions from the board?
I just had an interesting juxtaposition of the photos you showed of like the ancient city in Norway. I guess the building's as old as 1400, and then the modern industrial. Or did you get any sense of how people might have felt about that? Did people find that like jarring, or that it kind of just like fit right into, you know?
Yeah, really unique culture there that seems to embrace modern port industrial activity. You know, it's like, I don't know the percentage, but I'd say the vast, vast majority of the population of Norway lives within 2 miles of the coast, right? And everywhere you look, there are industrial facilities, and, you know, it's like they've been in oil and gas industry since the late 60s. Now they're very into offshore wind because they have fjords. They can supply spar buoys to the rest of Europe. So, you know, it's like the UK is, you know, having turbines towed to them. There really wasn't a discomfort with those two things being right next to each other.
Thank you. All right. So new business. Generally on communications reports, we don't do public comment on that.
This is unfinished business.
Oh, that is unfinished business. Sorry. That was not part of our communications. Any comments from the audience? Seeing that,
I wish I was Norwegian.
you'd make a good Norwegian.
He doesn't take an application.
Careful what you ask for. So new business, seven A, consultant selection and contracting for PIDP 2023 grant funding for the Redwood Marine Offshore Wind and Heavy Lift Multi-Purpose Marine Terminal, final permitting and 30% design project. Did you write that all out yourself, or?
I'm responsible for that.
Thanks, Rob.
Yeah.
We actually reviewed it though and said that was the best title. So he gets a gold star.
There was some thought put into it. All right.
So I've got a relatively simple version of this and then a whole lot of backup slides in case you want to get into deeper detail. But just basically, the district received a grant from the California Energy Commission. We released an RFQ for preliminary permitting and design, received 4 proposals, selected Moffitt Nickel. They completed that contract at the end of April of 2024. We received another grant, PDIP, federal grant this time. Released an RFQ, we received 1 proposal from Moffitt Nickel. We convened a technical review panel who recommends proceeding. So can talk more about that if you'd like. And then staff also recommends proceeding with to contract Moffitt Nickel. So some considerations. We did form an independent technical advisory committee that was going to review all the proposals we received. We only received 1, but we still convened that panel and spent several hours talking about the project and the proposals. And, you know, we had a conversation, should we release, put this back out to RFQ to try to get other proposals? And the collective consensus was no. And that group of 12 individuals unanimously concluded Moffitt Nickel is qualified to complete the project and that we should start contracting. Receiving only 1 proposal is acceptable from MARAD's perspective, in case you were wondering. Because we put a lot of effort into trying to recruit other firms to submit proposals. And since this is almost an $11 million contract, it is not unusual to receive 1 proposal for such large projects, because there aren't a lot of firms in the country that can handle projects of that size. And Moffitt Nickel has, I think, 22 sub-consultants, over half of which are local firms. And so, you know, they tend with big projects to have big teams. And so the team is big and kind of prevented, it didn't prevent, but all of those firms compiled together, formed a stronger team than they felt like they would have alone. And then this 4 bullets here is about not Moffitt Nickel's qualifications. So they've got GHD, SHN, Merkel Associates, Roscoe and Associates, a lot of local firms on their team bringing local knowledge, and they have staff that live here in our community. Moffitt Nickel serves as a consultant to multiple international firms that specialize in port terminals. They're also completing similar designs for New Jersey and Long Beach. And we see them as the ideal combination of global and local experience with strong background in designing port terminals. So I have a lot more slides if you want to dive deep into the numbers, but this is staff recommendation.
Thanks, Rob. I serve at the pleasure of the board, but what would you guys like to, any questions first off? And
well, we're doing a design, but Moffitt Nichols not going to build. And we don't have a private capital partner at present. How does that work?
Not uncommon. So we've got a permitting and engineering firm that's going to permit and design the project.
You just told me it's not uncommon. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
There we go. Thank you.
Think of it as building a house. You'll hire an architect and might have an architect that you're working with for years before you hire a contractor to build it. So we're in the design phase, not the construction phase. So we don't have a contractor. They have an architect.
So you just called Moffitt Nichols an architect?
They have marine architects on the team. Yep.
Make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
Motion and second. Any other comments or discussion up here? Well, they certainly have served us well. I would say that they have been a partner in this from day one and been steadfast in their duties. So
I forgot to mention that our project manager and deputy project manager are here with us.
Yeah, and I even said those nice things with them here, so you should be traveling. Anybody from the audience care to comment? Please step forward, tell me your name and where you're from.
Sure. Hi, I'm Barbara Brenner. I'm a resident of the city of Eureka. And congratulations on this opportunity to work with these folks. Moffitt Nichols, I looked through the proposal and they seem to be very qualified and really experienced. And I think they've submitted an impressive proposal. What did surprise me, though, was to find out that the development of a Bay Master Plan is part of the scope of this contract, and it's, according to the schedule in there, ready to begin, like, next month. It said third quarter of 24, so that's July and next month, and I haven't seen any press releases, and there hasn't been any media reports about this, so what I wanted to say is that I think it's really important that you implement a community and a stakeholder engagement process simultaneously at this point with the start of the master planning, and that the Bay master planning should not proceed without a public process, please. Also, the storage of the military reserve transport ships and anything else that's under consideration by the Humboldt Bay Development Association, that should go into this master planning as well and be incorporated into a process that does include public input. I see that community engagement's on the agenda for later, so I thank you in advance for swiftly soliciting public input into these plans and projects and processes that are going to significantly change Humboldt Bay and impact the surrounding communities. So that's it, and thank you.
Thank you, Bert. Mm-hmm. Anyone else care to comment? All right, we have a motion, second. I'm going to call a question. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye. All opposed. Motion passes. Congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you, Captain.
All right, let's move on to 7B. Authorize an agreement to mutually terminate ground and operating leases following successful completion of new market tax credit investments by and between the Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District and the Humboldt Bay Development Association.
So move.
No problem at all. I'm quite grateful that you were prepared at this point to discuss it.
I have a motion from Patrick and a second from Aaron. Commissioner Aaron.
Okay. So this item is to authorize an agreement to mutually terminate the ground and operating lease following the successful completion of the new market tax credit investment And as we know, this is between the district and the Development Association. And just to take a step back, I wanted to go back and really state, what is the purpose of the Humboldt Bay Development Association? So highlighting, it's about combating community deterioration and encouraging economic development through the preservation, rehabilitation, and conversion of underutilized, previously environmentally contaminated property. Skipping forward a little bit, for the redevelopment of shipping, aquaculture, and renewable energy business in the Bay community. So reflecting on that a little bit and understanding what's been done at this site, let's talk about the first site that Humboldt Bay Development Association did. So the achievement was the acquisition, cleanup, and repurpose of an environmental monster that was declared a Superfund emergency by the US EPA in late 2013. A dozen or more decaying tanks contained nearly 3 million gallons of corrosive pulping liquors and acids, amongst other volatile materials. And let's mention that these were near spear level because the tops were removed from many of these vessels and rainwater was getting in. So quite courageously, the Harbor District acquired this asset and used the Humboldt Bay Development Association, its public benefit corporation for economic development. We've shown their purpose to A, get in and get the site cleaned up and then redevelop and repurpose it, just as that is the article of the district, of the Development Association. So taking a step back, this is from a presentation we gave in March of last year, but let's go back to 2016. At the time of the investment, there was one tenant active in the facility. There were 7 jobs. The siding and roofs were failing. The doors and windows were many were broken and loose. There were failed plumbing and mechanical systems, as well as a non-functional electrical system. It was filled with the ghosts of occupants past, meaning they left in the middle of the night. Everything was there. You've probably heard me talk about how there was literally a lunchbox. A little bit of the plastic bag was left in the coffee cup, you know, from the workers' break. I mean, that's how quickly this happened. And it had a scheduled revenue of about $73,000 per year. So on the left, what the site looked like in 2016, not in the worst repair, but certainly on its way to not being cared for. Remember, it was vacated in 2009, 7 years earlier. And on the right-hand side is a building that sure was added to. It was completely resided. New roofs were added. Gutters were added. Electrical systems were added. Proper drainage was added for stormwater and so on. You'll also notice no activity in the first photograph and quite a few workers' cars and others in the second photograph. In 2016, an empty warehouse. In 2023, I probably didn't take this time. I should take this photo when they're actually unloading. This is critical overnight freight, but a very active and well-lit facility. 2016, this is our shops and stores building. That is our workers' car there in the photograph. In 2023, the building was nearly fully occupied. At the close of the new markets tax credits in March of 2023, there were 18 active tenants. The project over the course of the years created 97 jobs. The average rate of pay was $20.87 per hour. The scheduled annual gross revenue was $920,000. And there was an additional 75,000 square feet available for lease. So that action has been completed. It's important to note that as of today, we have some vacancy because we're preparing for Nordic Aqua Farms to come in, and they'll be taking some space in the property. Nordic Aqua Farms will be certainly adding to numbers. So this project was quite successful. The Development Association certainly, its stated purpose was fulfilled. And so we're at the end of the run, and right now the idea is that those certain agreements that were put in place to allow for the new market tax credit, it's time to wind them down. And the Development Association can be considered for our next venture and how we can do this in a similar manner. So happy to answer questions, but I think that's the summary.
Thanks, Chris. Any questions from the board?
Well, having served on the Humboldt Bay Development Association, I think it was a productive enterprise for the facilitation of the new market tax credit. And so while we're dissolving this particular relationship, that nonprofit remains available and nimble to partner to bring in additional economic opportunity.
Thank you for your service on that board as well. Any other comments?
I would just like to agree with Commissioner Higgins, and he and I have been
on the Development Association since its inception, and really feel proud about what went on there, and hopefully we can continue to do similar work.
Thank you for your service as well.
Yeah, it really looked like a stretch at the outset with the new market tax credit. Really complicated, kind of going, you know, how does this work? And the staff, and we had strategic consultants, and so we made it work. And it looks easy in the rearview mirror.
Well, since I wasn't on the board at the time when the former pulp mill was acquired, I can give just complete compliments to the members of the commission who were on the board at the time, because I think one of the most impressive projects that's happened in the county for a cleanup. For a long time, in that picture, you can see what was the largest solar array in Humboldt County. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we have the Harbor District has a history of renewable energy and promoting solar. The airport microgrid is now bigger than that, so it's the second largest solar array in Humboldt County on that roof right there.
Yeah, I know that RCEA.
That's good. And yeah, and thinking about this project, it might have been like one of the only blessings of the drought that we were going through. Had we had some El Nino years back then, that those pulping liquors would have been in the bay prior to the Harbor District acquiring this property. And so the only reason that they weren't was because of, or one of the only reasons was because of the drought years that we were having. And thinking of future development, and I know it's a requirement, so hopefully we would never get ourselves into this position again, but can someone tell me how much liability did the previous owners, how much did they pay for the cleanup of the mess that they left?
Close your eyes and what do you see?
Yeah. And so that's why it's real important. And a lot of the community encourages us when we do new development to make, and it's all required now that there'll be decommissioning bonds. So even if they disappear, there'll be money there for decommissioning. I mean, that, you know, that private companies making lots of money were able to walk away and leave the mess on the taxpayer's shoulders so that, you know, you and I paid to clean up their mess that they made money off of this.
But we love the EPA.
But we did, well, but who
13
pays? 13
million
pays,
bucks.
Yeah, but whose money is the EPA using?
I know, but I'm, it would have been well beyond the capacity of the district.
Yeah.
And it was kind of funny because they said, well, you know, would you say you're going to pay this back, but actually you're never going to have to? And that, of course, would have hampered our ability in the long term. So I'm really glad that the EPA graciously yielded and provided those services. And it's and I want to give a shout out to Jack Frider and 700 trips with pulp mill liquors to Longview, Washington, with no accidents. And he leveraged the capital from the private side. And we caught heck for that. But that was part of how we pulled this off. Pretty amazing enterprise overall.
Indeed.
And I'll say, I wouldn't want to not acknowledge also is the Wyatt Tribe, who had the EPA emergency task section of the Superfund division, were here in Humboldt Bay because of the Wyatt Tribe. And that's what connected them with the Hunter District.
And then did the Wyatt Tribe arrange a 6.4 earthquake while they were here over the weekend? Because that's what triggered it. They saw those tanks and then they felt that earthquake and it just like, they took control of the site. So thank you. That was really serendipitous that they were in the Bay as a result of the Wyatt and rendering service in that regard. And we, you know, that's amazingly lucky in hindsight.
Yeah, a lot of good people, a lot of people owe a great debt of gratitude to a great many people. Steve Kalanog from EPA, absolutely. Jared Huffman from member of Congress, just steadfast, got that done in a hurry. And I Anyways, it's a nice project. I'm glad that we are done with this part of it. It seemed like a long time to be partners, and we leased it back from the New Market tax credits, which that whole New Market tax credit voodoo tax finance is very confusing. But we made it through it, and it worked. And it was, I think, a huge success. And we wouldn't have, and I'll give Mike Wilson credit for this, we would not have that infrastructure there, and we would never see infrastructure like that again had we not saved it. So it's something that people need to think about. So I'm going to take it. I'm done with the board, right?
We're done pontificating.
Pontificating, yes. If anybody from the audience care to comment on this termination of our relationship with the Development Association? If somebody would like to step up and explain New Market tax credits to us, you're more than welcome. Ryan? All right, so I have a motion and a second. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion passes.
Okay, so the next order of business is the preliminary budget adoption for fiscal year 24-25. And hopefully you've had a chance to review the budget in your packet. There are some real truths in this budget this year, as many agencies are learning this is going to be a very lean fiscal year. It's the same for the Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District. We are in spots where we have the opportunity to do some good, and we have some areas that we can do some cutting, but we're pretty lean. And so this is hard to see on the screen, but I just kind of want to work through this a bit. Always shy of acknowledgement, but Mindy's put a remarkable amount of her time and efforts into this budget. And I know that it's accurate and honest because of the work that she's done in it. So let's kind of scroll down to the bottom line here and really look at where we're at. So we're missing part of a slide for some reason. I'm going to go to my paper budget. So when it's all said and done, we're in a situation where we have a net income after debt service of about $653,000 of a loss. The good news is because we manage our district fiscally well, because we have a reserve policy and through exceptional cash management, we have the reserves to cover that shortfall and still work through our operations. So the preliminary budget is balanced, and again, this occurs because of cash on hand. However, with declining revenues and the servicing of additional debt, which was taken on in 2023, it's important to note that cash on hand may decrease. In 23, the district borrowed approximately $5.5 million for the acquisition of some land and to dredge. That land was specific to the new terminal project. And those loan payments are split 44% to the general fund and 50% to Woodley Island for dredging, that is. And that repayment comes from the dredge surcharge income. Dredging was budgeted at $3 million and awarded to the Jupiter Group. And half of those funds were expended in 2023. As I reported earlier, Jupiter will be coming because they weren't able to finish before the dredge window closed last year due to some mobilization challenges. But they've reaffirmed their commitment to return this summer and complete the project. So the dredge fund balance will help us there. There's an approximately $6 million contract that was executed last year with Caltrans for the Spartina eradication project, which is underway. These funds hit over a number of years. This commenced in June of 2023. I think it's important to recognize this project because to date, while it's had its bumps, it's a successful project in our conservation world and restoration of lands. This is specific to Tulawat Island. There's an $8.6 million inflow from funds from the Port Infrastructure Development Grant that we received. And we have California Energy Commission grant money to fund the remainder of that, or the match. That, of course, supports our multi-purpose wind terminal project. And so we just awarded that contract tonight. So we weren't putting it in the budget, but it will be reflected in the final budget now that it's awarded. The Fields Landing Boatyard, we have some extraordinary expenses that are occur. As we know, we're working through a pre-treatment and project installation. $150,000 of the monies that were allocated for that site come out of this fiscal year's budget. And we have our Redwood Marine Terminal outfall line repair and inspection, which are budgeted at $285,000, approximately $200,000 in the outfall and $85,000 in inspection and dive. So the budget process and policy previously approved by the board states that the board will maintain a fund balance or working capital balance of at least 20% of operating expenditures in the general fund and all enterprise funds and internal service funds. So staff will continue to review the preliminary budget to identify areas in which cuts can be made to one, reduce the budget shortfall, and two, fund the recommended reserve. One specific area to note for improvement, there is an opportunity here for us to increase revenues over the 24-25 fiscal year by focusing on collection of non-performing accounts that have delinquent balances now to bring them into a performing status in the current fiscal year and forward, and the leasing of vacant slips here at Woodley Island and Upland Real Estate and our other assets, which has a significant opportunity for an increase in revenue, and that will certainly be a focus of staff for 24-25. Rather than estimating what we could lease up, it's important to be honest and to put that as a goal and not reflect revenues that have not yet come in. So that's our budget report. Remember, this is a preliminary budget for adoption. Once this is done, then district staff will work with the district treasurer to develop a cash flow statement, bring a final budget forward. And in the interim, we'll be looking at this a little bit closer to see where further cuts can be made. But right now, this is a pretty true and raw budget. Again, I want to recognize the work of staff that's gone into this budget, this preliminary budget. And we'll go from there. So any questions?
Thanks, Chris. Any questions from the board?
Black ink, I like it.
Red ink. So I got a couple. So the outfall work that we've had to do this last year, is that going to be able to be claimed in FEMA? Will we get any federal or state monies?
Yet to be determined. There was not a disaster that we fell under in order to make application for disaster assistance. But there are programs where in extreme circumstances, you can go to FEMA or Cal OES and ask for support in that fund. Typically, I believe they are low interest or no interest loans.
Yeah.
And that will be our next order of action. Right now, one of our challenges, we're not certain what the full repair is going to look like. And that part of that process is understanding what you're going to have to undertake. So keep in mind, right now we have an emergent repair that we did, which was the rock bag placement, which is working quite well. And we'll hold the line in place. It does require periodic monitoring, which we're doing. But the permanent repair, we're working incidentally with SHN and Moffitt-Nickel on what that permanent repair is like, and we haven't landed on that quite yet. We are inching ever close.
Okay. And then the second thing I have is, somebody left me some information, and as we all know, the commercial fishing fleet is struggling. It's hard to be a commercial fisherman when you can't fish. And your expenses still continue. You still have to pay insurance, still have to pay slip rent. And I'm a big fan of raising slip rents. I mean, it's as big a fan as anybody of raising slip rents. But because it doesn't pay for itself even close to what it costs. But at the same time, there's a good chance that a lot of these boats are going to be struggling in the future, and we may see some effort to reduce or eliminate slip rents for that industry for a year. Is there a path to get payment for that from the state or feds as part of the disaster relief? Can we look into that?
Absolutely, we will look into it. The plan right now is that we do believe that we do not have the opportunity on the declaration that was made in the prior year, but perhaps with the incoming declaration that we'd be able to apply on the current year. So that's the process. Without getting into too much detail, we have been in communication with Senator McGuire's office and specifically Chris Gilson and his office to talk about this. The focus immediately was, can you help us to get the money released from last year? It's federal money, but we need to get the money in the fishermen's hands. And, you know, will you help us go to the federal government and do that? We got a very positive response to that. Also in days thereafter, well, we take no credit for this. I do want to point out that Congressman Jared Huffman made a call to the federal government to release those funds. So the work is very actively being done on this. The district, if is unable to do that, could look at considerations for specific payment arrangements. Staff has that authority through the credit committee that was created, or the collections committee, I might be quoting that incorrectly, a couple years back during the COVID pandemic. And we can also look at temporary abatements of late fees if satisfactory payment arrangements are made. So none of those are commitments, but there are a few considerations that are under discussion on that topic. We do believe that we probably could be some sort of an applicant for a fund to provide relief or to be seek reimbursement for some portion or all of a rent abatement program. But we would have to secure that agreement prior to committing to those actions.
Okay. And right now the budget, the current budget is not, the preliminary budget does not account for that.
Does not.
Okay. All right. That's all I have.
Do we anticipate the mega grant being added later at some point into this year's fiscal budget, or do we have any sense of timing on when those funds might be reflected?
That grant occurs in successive fiscal years. It isn't part of this year. It will not be occurring this year.
Okay. I just want to make a comment about Commissioner Dale said about the fleet, and it's more than just the salmon situation that's been closed for 2 years. They're just kind of on all levels. The commercial fishing industry in California is in a... I really appreciate you noticing and thinking about that going forward with the situation.
Audience now. Anybody care to speak on our preliminary budget? Shane?
No comments.
Seeing none. I'm going to bring it back to the board.
Does it require action?
I think we have to. Isn't this you an would adoption?
Adopt
it.
Yeah. We adopt the preliminary, yeah. But then yes. The final comes next month.
So move.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Okay. All right, we're moving on to item 8A, a resolution supporting community engagement. That's a
future agenda item.
I think that's something we've been planning for a while. So I think that's a good resolution. I would also like to see something about relief for the fleet. I have a disagreement with someone about ocean conditions being a culprit, and he just said that all fisheries are in dire straits, but he won't admit that to me on the telephone.
What we could do is
affect ocean conditions.
What we can do is staff could take in this next 30 days an examination of what the disaster declaration looks like and what options might be available underneath that. And if that doesn't provide something, then...
And can we add language to it, maybe?
You know, we can come back and look at other opportunities.
Okay.
You know, I could have swore Larry Otker said that since they were doing the long fin smelt stuff related to the aquaculture facility, that the ball was in play for us to get a permit for the take a long fin smelt so we can dredge. And if that's not transpiring, I'd like to see it on an agenda, because we got to get that done at some point. I mean, we keep spending huge amounts of money for the permitted path of using a clamshell to go out and muck up the bay and resuspend sediment and kill demersal eggs. And it's the stupidest thing that you could possibly do. It's the highest pollution method of extracting sediment. And if we used a suction dredge, there would be none of the same side effects. The materials could be transported more efficiently. It could be done in a cost-effective manner, and it would be sustainable into the future. And we are not currently sustainable, nor is it rational. If it's not handled, I want to see it handled. I want to see it on the agenda. And I want to see that resolved, because
I'll speak to it a little bit right now, Pat. I think it's well worth being on the agenda. We are in the process of baby stepping through that process of the incidental take permit. The first subject at hand is to get one of our customers, tenants, their situation addressed with an incidental take permit, and that will lead to a process that will give us an incidental take permit.
So can we coattail on this CESA permit, or do we need to file another one?
That's debatable.
Particular.
I think Rob knows probably.
We're very close on the intake system, which is really in partnership with Nordic at the moment.
So once they've actually issued a CESA permit for long fin smelt, then we feel like we have some momentum, and then we apply.
That's right. And maybe this is worthy of a discussion in the future, but last chance grade, Caltrans just announced that they're going with the tunnel method, which is one of the more expensive projects, but they think they'll save money over time because of the mitigation costs. So long fin smelt is likely to be the same. Even though it feels like it could be cheaper, the mitigation cost for suction dredging could be so high that it's not cheaper than mechanical dredging. But pretty soon we'll have some real numbers to share with you. You know, I'd say September, October board meeting, we can have really deep analysis of this question.
If these issues aren't resolved in our favor, there'll be a time when fuel costs and everything will actually be prohibitive, and commerce in the bay will be restricted. So I hope that that's considered by the agency, although I haven't seen any sign of it.
Okay.
Which is unfortunate.
Those are all future agenda items. We're kind of getting off track here.
All right. And I want that back on.
I
thought we were done with it.
Before we adjourn, I have an observation that I have to say, Rob. You go to Norway, you look at a bunch of really impressive things, and the thing that impresses you the most is the gentleman's presentations. It makes me smile. A smile in my heart. All right. So everyone, please have a wonderful June, a good 4th of July, and be safe. And thank you for attending our meeting. We adjourn. Might be a new record.
Honking like a Canada goose.